if I laughed. I just remember I want my money back. I can't remember if it sucked or if I had a blast. All I know is at the end of the show, when the credits rolled, it said
Filmtopia cast 3,000.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Filmtopia Cast 3000. I'm your host, Greg McIver, and with me is...
Nikki Boom Boom.
And on today's episode, we're going to touch upon a few different things. We're going to talk about the Oscars, and then a couple of movies that we've seen, and then round it out with some movie news.
That's what we do.
Yes, that is in fact what we do, and we do it well. We do it better than anybody else that's out there trying to do Filmtopia Cast 3000.
That's right. No one does Filmtopia Cast 3000 like we do, and please nobody try.
Yes, please. Yes, this is our
please,
thing.
Just let us have this.
Yes, exactly. But I'd like to actually start things off. Nick, as you know, I recently rewatched Who Framed Roger Rabbit not too long ago.
I did know that, yes.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film, definitely in my top 20, and it still holds up even after
it's
all these
movie.
Years. It's a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic movie, and one of the reasons I bring it up is, you know, I've been kind of working on my... impersonation of Roger Rabbit.
Oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw that out there, you know, maybe get a little feedback. You know, it's still needs a little fine tuning, but I'm happy with where it is so far. So, all right, let's go with Roger Rabbit. Here it comes.
Jeepers, Eddie! The Weevils and Jessica are in Toontown!
That sound pretty good?
That's pretty good, Greg.
Thank you. I'm pretty proud of it myself.
I've been working on my Eddie Valiant impression. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Ooga booga!
he does say ooga booga.
Ooga booga!
Well, I think, you know, this is not all you have.
I think that's the only thing he says.
That's, in fact, the only thing he says in the entire movie. Mm-hmm. You hit the nail right on the head. Well, good. Well, you got the Eddie Valiant, I've got the Roger Rabbit.
We're a winning team.
Yeah, we're a winning team. I think we're going to go far with this. Yeah. Just sit back and let the money roll in. All right, anyway, now that we've gotten that out of the way,
I think we should maybe apologize for our brief hiatus here.
Yeah,
it's been a little while since we...
That's very true. Unfortunately, we both work a job that, you know, it requires to work overnight. The shift is from, like, 11 to 7 a.m.,
yeah.
And it's been pretty hellacious recently.
It has been hellacious, but also I think it's worth mentioning, like, man... There have not been any good movies out lately. Like, there's
nothing that's been excitable at the very least.
Nothing's gotten me excited, yeah.
No,
like, I'm sorry if there's something out there that you've watched that you like, but, like, nothing's gotten me out.
No, nothing. Nothing's caught my eye either, and I think...
We've made some brave attempts in face of this current drought.
This is true,
drought,
yeah. A combination of, yeah, a drought and good film choices and just our work schedule trying to kill us slowly. So,
but you did see something recently.
I did see something recently, yes. And do you want to talk about that now? Or
Right. We were going to discuss the Oscars.
We had a plan
I'm
here,
sorry.
Okay? We specifically said 5 seconds before we sat down what we were going to do. And now you're just going off.
I'm rusty, okay? It's,
Oh my god, man.
Go ahead.
All right, fine. The Academy Awards just recently happened. I got to see bits and pieces of them. They were actually showing it at, our place of business, so I got to tune in a little bit, but, obviously I know what the full results were, and, gotta say, I'm not really surprised about anything.
No, I have a couple friends that pretty much called every...
Yeah.
They went on Facebook beforehand, and they're like, here you go, you don't need to watch the Academy Awards, here's what's gonna win.
Almost
without exception, it was like 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10 hit rate.
Yeah, know? I think the only two surprises, really, as far as the awards were, Ang Lee winning for Life of Pi.
Yep.
Not that it wasn't deserved, I didn't see the movie myself, so I can't comment on that, but, I mean, the movie was highly regarded by pretty much everybody that went and saw it, you know, critics and, you know, plain old audience folk alack. And, you know, Ang Lee is a fine director when he's not doing a Hulk movie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
I would like to think that the award is very deserved. It's just that's not who most people were talking about when they thought of potential winners. But, so that was a little surprising. And then I think the other one that kind of caught people off guard was the Best Adapted Screenplay. I think most people thought that was going to go to Silver Linings Playbook, but Argo ended up snatching that up as well.
Oh, I didn't even know that, actually.
Yeah. Argo went ahead and took that prize as well.
Huh.
I don't think that, like, shocked everybody, but I think most people had, everyone's been so certain with their choices and, you know, deservedly so this time around because, you know, everyone's been right. I think, again, that one just kind of took people back a little bit.
Well, I think it's also because most people called Argo winning Best Picture, and a lot of times they view those categories as like, oh, you didn't
the
get
consolation
Best
Prize,
but, yeah.
Which is exactly what happened with Django Unchained. You
right.
know,
that's Tarantino's spot, basically, is the best original screenplay spot.
Yeah, didn't he get that for Pulp Fiction?
He got that for Pulp Fiction. I want to say he got that for something else, too.
I think it was Inglourious
Bastards,
yeah. Yeah, that's, and don't get me wrong, it's fantastic if you can win an Oscar for writing a screenplay, that's great. But it is almost like a consolation prize. They did the same thing with Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris, you know, a year or so ago, which to me, I thought that was the best picture of that year, but I was happy to see that it at least won Best Original Screenplay, and deservedly so.
Now, I don't want to talk personally, myself, too much about the Oscars, just because I didn't get to see any of them.
That's okay.
And I didn't really get to see too many, honestly, the movies that were nominated. Like, I saw Lincoln, and I saw Django Unchained.
Saw Zero.
And I saw Zero Dark Thirty. That's true. Did she win? Did Jessica Chastain win?
No.
Oh, no, it was Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson. Well, she was there, but she won.
Jennifer Lawrence.
She won.
That's
anything.
Right, she was being adorable online.
Yeah.
I got my Oscars through internet gifts and people being outraged about certain things.
Yeah,
so
it's totally.
That's the perspective I can come at it from.
Okay.
Speaking of Life of Pi, do you know about the controversy surrounding its win?
The tiger didn't get nominated?
No.
What's up?
Well, so the studio that did all the visual effects, and that movie's kind of built on visual effects.
Yeah.
They went bankrupt, and supposedly they haven't seen pretty much, any of the profits from the movie. And so the day after it won, I saw a bunch of my friends on Facebook, their profile picture was just, like, flat green.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done in protest of the fact it's, like, supposed to be green screen.
Oh, that's what the movie would have looked like.
It would have looked exactly like that, yeah. And they have comparison shots of, like, here's Life of Pi without visual effects. Here's Life of Pi with visual effects. And it's like, yeah, you're not making this movie without, you know.
Wow, I did not hear about that. That's awful.
So,
what are they doing?
Spreading awareness about that.
Yeah, what are they doing with the movie? What, is Ang Lee sitting on a huge pile of cash?
Maybe,
oh,
I don't know.
But Joker's going to come by and light it all on fire. No,
Ang Lee just wants to see the world burn.
Apparently. Well, no, he would have made more Hulk movies if that was the case.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true.
Mutated dogs. Nick Nolte.
Poodles. Mutated poodles.
Mutated poodles. Nick Nolte is your big smoke monster villain at the end. Anyway. You know, that's awful. No, they did wrong by doing that to the visual effects people, and it needs to be rectified.
I think so as well. The other thing people are all worked up about, of course, is Seth MacFarlane's, people are split on it.
But... Yeah, well, like, that's pretty much with every Oscar host. Everyone is split on it. From what I caught, I watched the opening thing online after the fact, because I missed it, but I did watch the whole thing, and then I caught little snippets here and there. I did a fine job. I think it was really funny.
You showed me clips, and I thought he was doing a great job.
Yeah, I thought it was great. No, you know, the We Saw Your Boobs song was fantastic and right out of old Hollywood. No, I'm kidding. But no, I thought he did a really good job. He's a song and dance man. He's an entertainer, and I thought he did, you know, a fine job. Nobody's ever going to be satisfied with the stupid, you know, Oscar hosting, you know, performance. I mean, I think they even criticized poor Billy Crystal when they brought him back.
Yeah.
And it was, not that he did anything wrong per se, but it was just like, oh, it's more of the same, you know, and it's just like, nothing can satisfy you people. I mean, honestly, online critics and media people are really at their worst when it comes to reviewing the Oscars and, you know, hosting duties of award ceremonies, because they just turn really vicious for some reason. And not to say there haven't been bad hosts in the past, but, I mean, sometimes I think they just need to kind of calm down because they get downright angry when it comes to this shit. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think things have gotten maybe a little more vicious as more people have access to opinions.
Yes.
Not access to opinions, but, like, broadcasting them very easily, you know, with the advent of the internet.
Just like us. Opinions! Opinions!
And one thing I heard thrown around a lot was like, Seth MacFarlane, culture of misogyny, blah, blah, blah.
What? You, really?
Yeah, people were really angry that he was making offensive jokes. And I'm like, it's Seth MacFarlane. Like, what did you expect when you hired Seth MacFarlane?
No, exactly. I think at one point in the show, like, he did a Chris Brown joke. And the audience were like, oh, and he was just like, yeah, boo him. He did what we were afraid he was going to do. You know, it's just like, yeah, why in the hell would you be surprised, you know? Now, granted, he did make a Mel Gibson joke, which is very dated, but, you know.
It's a bit dated, yeah.
You know, but still, he's going to do those things. It's, you know, why wouldn't the world hire the creator of Family Guy, you know, if you didn't want a little skewering happening? So.
Exactly.
No, I thought he did a fine job, you know.
And I don't think he went, like, on a headhunting party like Ricky Gervais.
No, not at all, which I should put that out there that I am a fan of Mr. Ricky Gervais.
Oh, I am as well. I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I have no problem with anything that he did at the Golden Globes by any stretch of the imagination. I think he was fine and dandy. But no, I don't think MacFarlane went nearly that far. So, but yeah, I thought it was entertaining. You know, it's the long and short of it. I thought he did a good job. And, you know, I don't know what people really want from that. From the host, I mean, I guess these people that criticize are just really impatient. They just kind of want to get to the awards, you know, and if they didn't have a host to criticize, then they'd start criticizing the winners for how long their acceptance speeches are, which I'm sure they already do that anyway. I just don't know what they're looking for in regards to, you know, what the host is supposed to do. It is a show. It's not just, you know, the show could be over in 10 minutes if all they did was just hand out the damn awards.
If we're looking at Billy Crystal as our model of, like, what a good Oscar host should be, it seems like they want someone like entertaining and hilarious who doesn't work blue,
right?
And kind of has that old-timey Hollywood showmanship. But
right,
how many people besides Billy Crystal are you gonna get to do that really well?
Not really. I mean, not many. And really, aside from the blue aspect, I think MacFarlane is actually pretty close to what they would be looking for then, because
absolutely.
He does have sort of an old soul to him, you know.
Again, oh, he loves like all the road movies,
the Bob Hope and the Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think if you take away the blue, then he would be basically, you know, a younger Billy Crystal essentially doing this.
In some ways, yeah.
But I don't know. I would agree with you. Billy Crystal is sort of the model for, you know, what the quote-unquote perfect Oscar host we. He basically took over from Bob. He didn't take over from Bob Hope, but I mean, aside from Bob Hope, I think he's done it more times than anybody else.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jon Stewart did a good job when he did it, if I recall. I don't remember if he was heavily criticized. He probably was.
He's like beloved and hated by half of the country, either half of the country to the.
Fair enough. Well, why? It's not like he takes any political stances on
anything.
No.
Actually, that's a good segue, because the third thing that everybody's all riled up about is the fact that the FLOTUS, the first lady, presented the award for best picture.
Yeah, people got pissed off when I think it was this previous Oscar, they were doing like a clip of like people talking about like their love of films and stuff like that, and Obama made an appearance on that clip where he had a little, you know, he spoke a few seconds about his love of movies. And everyone was outraged, you know, and it's like, what's he doing on the Oscars? Well, he's the president, so he kind of has carte blanche to do that if he wants to. And B, maybe he just really likes film, you know? And why not get an opinion from, you know, the most powerful man in the country if he's also a film lover as well? I mean, I don't personally see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't know. I
mean, FLOTUS presenting Best Picture.
But pause real quick. I only found out, like, a few months ago that we refer to them as POTUS and FLOTUS.
Oh, really?
I think that's really funny.
Yeah, POTUS.
That sounds like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Like, not the Obamas specifically, just that we use those shorthands to refer to the president and the first lady.
Oh, look, who's
the Oh, here comes POTUS and FLOTUS.
POTUS and FLOTUS. You fools! You go and knock over that stagecoach and then tend to the barn. POTUS and FLOTUS. About that. Oh, wow.
Okay. So FLOTUS was on the
Oscars. All right. So FLOTUS was on the Oscars. So I don't know. I mean, it doesn't
I get a little bit why people are. I'm not like angry about it.
It doesn't.
And I think people are getting really way too worked up about it.
Yeah.
People are going like, politics in the Oscars, blah blah blah.
She didn't get out there and announce like her stance on any kind of foreign policy.
No.
Right? Well, no, I'm assuming she just presented the damn award, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, I do kind of feel like.
Now,
I don't know.
I'm not saying I 100% agree with the choice of having the First Lady of the United States present that award.
POTUS and FLOTUS.
POTUS and FLOTUS. I'm not saying I'm 100% against the idea or for it, for that matter. I would think that duty would have fallen to some Hollywood legend, maybe, or something like that. You know, someone that's
And I guess Jack Nicholson introduced her.
Okay.
So there's that.
Well, they should have just had him present the damn thing then.
Yeah.
If she had wanted to be involved in the show, I'm fine with that. I have no problem with the president or the first lady, photos and photos, making a little appearance and saying, hey, you know what? We're film fans too. You know, hey, good for them. You know, I'm happy that they like film too and that they're down with this. But yeah, maybe
there's a difference, I guess, between being a fan of it and then being in that world. And I kind of feel this way too. I feel like things like this make them a little bit more in the film world as opposed to in the politics world, where they should be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, she was just on Jimmy Fallon doing the Dougie, too. Like, doing
really?
A little, like, dance off with him.
Oh, wow.
And it's just things like that where it's like, you should be on C-SPAN. Like, go back to C-SPAN.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think there might be room for both. I don't think it's necessarily bad to see the president and the first lady, POTUS and FLOTUS, as likable people, you know, that
sure.
You know, have senses of humor and, you know, they're human just like anybody else. I mean, now in the olden times, you know, a leader was supposed to be fearless and, you know, seen as more than a man, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But I think times have changed a little bit, and I think it's okay to humanize our leader a little bit. But I'm not saying, again, I entirely agree with it, but I'm not entirely against it either. I guess I'm in the middle. I guess I'm an independent.
I think just from the perspective that, like, we want to be able to keep perspective on these people and not, like,
right.
lionize them or humanize them too much, be able to keep, like, an objective.
Yeah.
Whatever. This is not political
cast
3000.
I think this is,
but...
I think that the politics, it's infectious, and the show has been infected. So, let's cut that limb off right now and jump to some movies.
This podcast is a virus.
A computer virus. Trust me, I'm a doctor. That was a reference to, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is probably the funniest show currently on television, or at the very least one of the funniest shows currently on television. It's definitely in the top five, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So
I want a spinoff for Dr. Mantis Toboggan, personally.
Dr. Toboggan! Mantis Toboggan! Oh, such a great moment. That's a fantastic show. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Anything else we want to say about the Academy Awards of 2013?
I enjoyed what little I saw of the show. I thought Seth MacFarlane did a great job. I thought everybody that won what they did deserved it. You know, obviously Daniel Day knocked it out of the park with Lincoln, so
mm-hmm.
good on him. Jennifer Lawrence was very good in Silver Linings Playbook. I don't know if I would have picked her as best actress, but then again, I didn't really get a chance to view the other nominees, so I can't really comment on that. But she was very, very good in that movie, so definitely was worthy of the award. Christoph Waltz was, I mean, come on, that man just...
Oh, he was great.
Yeah,
I'm very glad that he won.
Yeah,
that was
fantastic, and absolutely fantastic in Django Unchained. And then Anne Hathaway, the only good thing in Les Miserables, so I'm happy for her, and I'm happy that movie didn't win a single damn thing other than Best Supporting Actress.
I'm a big Tarantino fan, this will sound weird, but I'm kind of happy that Django Unchained didn't win Best Picture.
Really?
Yeah, I saw better movies this year.
Oh, fair enough.
It's definitely like fourth or fifth place on. I really liked it. I really liked the movie. It's one of the best movies I saw this year, but it's not the best movie I saw this year.
Well, I think
definitely not my favorite Tarantino movie.
Right. Well, I think we both agree that The Avengers should have won Best Picture.
Oh, absolutely.
Easily.
That was the best movie of the year.
That was easily the best movie of the year. It was the most popular. Critics loved it too. What more do you want, you know?
It's one of the few movies that I've seen recently since my childhood that I could just kind of watch over and over and over and over again and not get sick of it.
Easily, no, it's fantastic. So, Avengers, you got robbed, I'm sorry. But, and we got more superhero movies coming up to look forward to.
That's
so,
very true.
We'll be able to satiate ourselves while we wait for the Avengers 2 to be made. What? You look like you want to say something.
No, no. Continue your line of thought.
Well, my line of thought was crashing right into a wall.
Oh, that's what I was waiting for.
Hey.
So, let's then transition and talk about the sad state of affairs at the box office recently.
I just got back from seeing a movie.
You sound real excited about it.
Oh, it was fantastic. It's called Jack the Giant Slayer. Directed by Bryan Singer, who's
fantastic.
He's a fantastic director. I really like Mr. Singer when he's not doing Superman. I really I don't even hate that movie either, but
I
know you do. No, Bryan Singer is great, and even Christopher McQuarrie, who wrote The Usual Suspects, had a hand helping with the screenplay for Jack the Giant Slayer.
Okay.
But the movie was just meh is the best way I can say it. It was meh. It's a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale, not for, very small children, but it is still a fairy tale, and it's shot and presented in a very fairy tale-like aspect, It is basically telling the story of the events that would come to inspire the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, essentially, about a farm boy named Jack. Who has a misadventure with beans and a princess and Stanley Tucci, and there's a beanstalk, and...
Does Stanley Tucci play the princess?
Yeah, Stanley Tucci plays the princess Isabella, and he's phenomenal! No, Stanley Tucci is our human villain in it, Sir Roderick. Basically, the story of the movie is, you've got a young farm boy, Jack, who grew up hearing stories about giants and how, they were once a threat to the world. Concurrently, you've got Princess Isabella growing up hearing those same stories as well. So you got a parallel thing going on, which is, I think, forced way too much, and by the end of it, they don't seem like real people. But anyway, through a series of circumstances, he gets a hold of the magic beans, and a giant beanstalk grows, carrying his house and the princess, who happen to come by and visit him, into the clouds. So he is tasked by the king to go and rescue her, and he's accompanied by the villain, Sir Roderick, played by Stanley Tucci, and like the head of the king's guard, which is played by Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ewan McGregor. His character is just cut right out of a fairy tale. He's very much like, I'm the knight in shining armor, I'm going to do this, He's not the main hero of the film. He is a hero, but he's very much cut out of a storybook, and he plays his part well. There were some awkward moments in the movie. There was a lot of awkward pauses, especially with McGregor's character. Like, there would be like a pause right before he's about to say something to the main character, Jack. And then he would say what he was going to say, and you were thinking, like, oh, it was building up to something. And then it's just a line, when Jack kills a giant and saves Ewan McGregor's character at one point. And again, Jack's just a farm boy, he's not a proven warrior or anything, so he kills a giant and saves Ewan McGregor. McGregor stands up, dusts himself off, walks over to him, with a look of awe on his face. And there is literally a 6-second pause where he just kind of looks at him with a smile on his face. And you're waiting for it, and you're waiting for it, and the line is, well done, Jack. And it's like, I was really thinking, there was like a witty line coming or something.
Witty
like
or
that.
Profound.
Yeah,
or...
something, more than just like, it certainly didn't require that 6-second pause of like, nah. Well done, Jack. And it's like, what the, okay, so.
Mr. McGregor forgot his line, it seems
It did seem like that, and they just went with it. And it happens more than once in the movie, too, okay. Unfortunately. It's the least of the movie's problems. There's nothing really exciting happened in the movie. I mean, they go up to the giant land once they climb the beanstalk, and pretty much everything that happens up there is just camera shots of, like, impressive-looking mountains and waterfalls. That's 90% of the action that happens up there. They do encounter the giant. Some stuff happens. Even the death of the first giant at the hands of Jack itself is not very thrilling. And then they kind of get out of there, and they head back to, the ground, which, leads into our third act of, the giants manage to figure out a way to get down there, and then there's the big war. But the big war, really, it just ends up being Ewan McGregor and the king, played by Ian McShane, who looks ridiculous in this movie.
Okay.
Who looks absolutely ridiculous in his little getup that they have him in as the king. It basically amounts to them playing tug of war with the Giants for like a good 15 minutes, you know.
Tug of war.
Basically, they're trying to pull up the drawbridge so the Giants can't cross over.
Oh.
And the Giants are trying to, they've got their ropes hooked into it and they're trying to pull it back down. So like a good 10, 15 minutes of them just kind of like tugging at ropes, you know. And yeah, sure, the Giants are throwing trees at this point, you know, and people are getting hit with the trees. And that's, I guess it's very thrilling. I mean,
You guess it's very thrilling, or it is very thrilling?
It's not very thrilling at all. Basically, in order to hide the fact that really nothing was happening, Brian Singer literally put up a smoke screen, and like he set oil on fire, so there's lots of smoke and flames in the shot constantly, and a lot of people yelling, too. So you've got smoke and flame, and it's supposed to distract you from the fact that the only thing you're seeing happening right now is Paul! Paul!
How are the king and the knight, like, win, like, on equal ground in a tug-of-war with the Giants?
Well, they've got, like, their whole, like, army, you know.
Oh,
or,
okay.
Yeah, like, or, like, their men behind them, too. So it's a bunch of little guys against a couple of big guys.
Gotcha.
That's why that works. But, yeah, distracting. I mean, like, every once in a while, like, the scene would do something cool, like the human, like, unveiled this, like, one weapon where it could fire, like, multiple arrows, almost like a machine gun, like, you know, bow or something like that, and it started taking out, and you're thinking at that point, yes, something's actually happening now, you know, the Giants are getting taken down by this thing, you know, and it's cool, but then the Giants get rid of it, and it's like, oh, and then you're back to Paul! Like, oh, that's fantastic, the one interesting thing that, you know, happened in this scene just happened. So, yeah, a lot of smoke and mirrors to hide the fact that nothing really exciting really happens in that scene. Also, I should point out Stanley Tucci, who again plays the villain, his whole story is that there's a magic crown that when one wears it, you can control the giants because it's made out of the heart of a giant.
Okay.
Well, it's a fairy tale. So basically, he takes the crown, he goes up to Beanstalk, and when he encounters the giants, he's like, y'all, my slaves, now you're going to come down and, you know, kill him. And like, we have no choice. So his plan was, yeah, I'm going to use the giants to take over the kingdom, and then once I've got this whole kingdom, you know, secured, then I might, you know, go across the waters and, you know, conquer other kingdoms too. But here's the thing of why that is a little silly that he would go to such great lengths in order to accomplish his goal. He was gonna be made king anyway! The character is set up to marry Princess Isabella at the very beginning of the movie. She's just become of age. They're gonna marry in like a month or so. He would have been the king if that had happened. Why wouldn't he have just...
Waited!
You know, or why wouldn't he have just, you know, if it was like, if like Ian McShane wasn't ready to resign the post right away and give up his kingdom to Tucci and Tucci wasn't ready, why didn't he just freaking kill the king then? It seems like it would be a little bit easier and more logical as opposed to dabbling in like the mystic arts of beans and theoretical giants in the sky. When, again, you've been set up to take command once the time is right, why don't you either just be patient or kill the king? And then, boom, you've got command of a whole army that can go and take over the rest of the kingdom for you. And blah, blah, blah. Maybe you just thought things would be easier with the giants. It is a fairy tale, after all.
This is not Tyrion Lannister we're talking about here. This is Sir Roderick and...
This is Sir Roderick and Jack the Giant Slayer.
Yeah.
I know it's a fairy tale, and one shouldn't be thinking too logically about fairy tales, but it certainly... caught my eye, and it's not even a deal breaker for the film. The fact that nothing exciting happens in the film is the deal breaker for the film. Again, I can't really criticize anybody that's in the film. I mean, the guy that they got to play young Jack, I'm sorry I'm blanking on his name, does a good job. The girl who plays Princess is very pretty, and she does a good job. Stanley Tucci is an amazing actor who will be good in anything that he does.
Sure.
Ewan McGregor did a fine job as, you know, the stereotypical, I'm from a fairy tale, and I'm a knight, you know. He did excellent. Ian McShane, for as silly as he looked, and he looked really silly, was fantastic. It just, again, the story was just, it was meh. There were some things happening, some special effects that looked okay even. I mean, I'm really surprised that with some of the films we've seen in the past years, like friggin' Avatar and such, that we're still getting a lot of these movies with subpar CGI. Now, maybe these film companies don't have access to the Cameron technology, and maybe that's why we're not seeing movies like Avatar. All I'm saying is I've seen better special effects than what was in this movie. And I'm just, but you see this a lot in other movies. It's like, why are people so satisfied with just, you know, meh. Like, the special effects in the Avengers were fantastic, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, they really managed to make them blend together really well, and this time around, it was just kind of like, eh, it was okay. So that annoys me a little bit too. It's just like I think the film could have looked better too. But overall, I just yeah, it was a meh movie. You know, it's not the worst thing you'll ever see, but I certainly couldn't call it a good movie either.
Yeah.
Now you tell me what you know.
I had a couple like that too. One of them I was actually kind of excited about too, and I was disappointed. So movie 43, I think we mentioned maybe a few podcasts ago
Yeah.
when trailers were coming out, and it looked like it had potential, like it could be
Yeah.
really funny. Here's the thing, it's about like 8 to 10 skits is
Right.
essentially what it is. So if you want to watch like 2.5 good skits, I guess wait until the DVD comes out and then just watch those skits and then return the
Skip
DVD.
over them, okay.
Because most of them are just not funny. Like, for
Oh.
example, the lead-off skit is, and I guess, you know, obviously part of the draw is that it's some stars being naughty and
Right.
doing some very blue-collar stuff, which actually, that was a draw for me. Like,
Yeah, no,
I
that's
want to see that. I want to
I
see them have fun
Yeah, I
and...
was excited about that too, to shed the A-list image for a second there and just
Yeah.
get down and dirty, you know?
But, Down and Dirty is great, but you need to still be funny when you go down low, you know? And if it's like, okay, so the first spoilers, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
The first skit is Kate Winslet is has been set up on a blind date and
Ah.
everything seems too good to be true. The man's like handsome and charming and successful, and then he shows up and it's Hugh Jackman and he has a like a scarf on. And he takes the scarf off, and surprise, there's testicles where his Adam's apple should be. And the whole 5 minutes is about her trying to draw attention to it and him being completely oblivious to the fact that he has
Testicles hanging from
testicles.
his throat.
That's the joke.
That's it?
That's it.
Well, I mean.
There's a couple funny ones. There's
Hmm.
the one that we were excited about where Naomi Watts and
Yes.
Liam Schreiber are homeschooling their child and
Yes.
giving him the entire like the whole
High school
high school
experience.
experience of like completely messing with him. That one was funny.
Okay.
There's a pretty funny one where Halle Berry and I believe his name is Stephen Merchant.
Stephen Merchant, yeah, from Office and Extras.
Yeah, he's Ricky Gervais's pal there.
Yep.
They go out on a blind date as well. I guess this was a motif.
Interesting.
They go out on a blind date and Halle Berry's just sick of all the like normal small talk that comes with a blind date, and they get into like an extreme truth or dare game to
Okay.
try to get it to know each other better, and it goes to some extreme places.
Oh boy. So was it funny or was
That
it?
one was pretty funny, I
Okay,
will admit.
that's cool.
And that's about it.
Aw.
None of the other ones were really very funny.
So the Anna Faris poop one wasn't very funny.
No.
It didn't look
It
funny,
was mostly
honestly, from the
like
trailer.
embarrassing.
Yeah.
Most of them were embarrassing, and there's no greater sin than to not be funny.
Oh no, I absolutely agree with you. That's why I don't go out and see a lot of comedies, actually, because I'm
Yeah.
afraid of being disappointed. Because when I get disappointed at a comedy, I get mad.
Yeah.
I get very mad. So, well, that's a shame. I was kind of interested in seeing that too. I have a love-hate relationship with that type of raunchy humor. I think it has its place in the world, but
You do get to see Kristen Bell in a Supergirl outfit. Little skirty skirt, and you
yay!
know, that's all well and good.
I like Kristen Bell.
Oh, me too.
She's
The
cool.
skit she was in was bad. It was like Batman and Robin, where Robin is like out speed dating. This is a lot of dating, like blind
I
dating
was gonna
stuff in
say,
the movie.
what the
It's the third
hell?
one I mentioned.
Okay, interesting.
I guess the one where they kidnap the leprechaun had its moments too. I don't know. Overall, movie 43 was just not very funny though.
That's a shame. It
Yeah, it looked like it could have been, right?
looked like it had some good moments. So I think that's the trailer fooled you. It probably like all of the good moments in the movie were probably thrown into the
A
trailer.
lot of them were, yeah.
That's a shame. That's a shame. But I'll still check it out just because I want to see the Liev Schreiber
Yeah, like, you
one
know,
with Naomi
Redbox it
Watts.
or Netflix it or something
Yeah.
in a few months here.
I'd figure it out.
And then I saw Parker, which, if you don't know, this is the one with Jason Statham.
I guess he wears a suit and he drives.
He drives and he shoots people and there's action.
Oh,
And
wow.
I was actually a little excited about this one. A, like, I like a big dumb Jason Statham movie.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. I've been raised on like American Ninja and big dumb action movies all my life.
Fair
That's
enough, fair
kind of
enough.
my thing. It's not my thing, but it's a thing. But anyway, like, I'll go see a Jason Statham movie just to see one. But then this one also is based on a book that I read a while back. There's a whole series of books about this anti-hero career criminal named Parker.
Okay.
And they've tried a few times to make movies based off of his books, and most of them are just really bad. Because he's not... He's an anti-hero. He's, like, not a good guy. And every time they make a movie about him, they try to soften up his image a little bit. I think the one that's widely accepted as, like, the best adaptation. I haven't seen it, though. There's a movie called Point Blank with Lee Marvin.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, and I am under the impression that Lee Marvin generally plays, like, a big hard ass. So
yeah, it's Lee Marvin.
Yeah. So anyway, that I think is the first Parker film that they tried to make. This one, they really, like, same thing that you would expect. They kind of ripped the brain out of it and made him nicer. And
they put him like a girl in distress.
I don't know. He's just generally a lot nicer. He's like they give him a little Robin Hood vibe at some points too.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. He definitely has like a code of conduct and doesn't want to hurt anyone. And for God's sake, he wins a carnival game for a little girl at the beginning.
What?
Just as he's passing by on his way to a robbery.
So just like in the book that he would.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
No, and Payback with Mel Gibson was another Parker.
Oh, is that a Parker movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I didn't see, but.
I didn't see that either. We're really bad at this game.
There's a lot of movies out there, folks.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies out there. We get to as many of them as we can. I heard in Payback that the character is not a very likable person. At least, I remember seeing the trailers for it, and he didn't seem like it. He seemed like kind of an asshole. Like, he steals from people when he's out on the street. I remember at one point in the trailer for Payback, you know, and not even like, you know, oh, that person looks like he deserved to be stolen from. Like, you know, somebody that looks innocent. He's just like, ha, I got your thing, you know?
Yeah,
it's like, so does that sound more in line of keeping of what Parker's like in the book?
Yeah, Parker just kind of takes what he needs. And,
okay.
You know, he works smart and gets the job. He's like who you'd want on your Reservoir Dogs team.
Okay.
And then usually his books, I think, have something to do with, like, the other guys. And this movie did as well. The other guys on his team get greedy and try to screw him over. And then he goes and gets Payback.
I see what you mean.
And they turned this into such a big dumb Jason Statham movie that I wasn't even aware of the other folks that were in this movie. J-Lo is like the main female in the movie.
Okay.
She's not his love interest, but she plays a big part, which is from the book. She's like a travel or a real estate agent.
A travel agent?
Well, no, but she's a real estate agent that
ends
up embroiled in the caper.
Okay. Nice.
In a weird way. And then Michael Chiklis and Bunk from The Wire are
awesome.
Yeah, they're the two main guys that are trying to screw him over.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then Nick Nolte's in it.
Nick Nolte, Parker, Potus and Potus. Potus and Potus in here.
Chewbacca. We kid Nick Nolte. You're a heck of a guy and a good actor. Just damn, it must hurt. Anyway,
speaking must hurt, Nick Nolte.
Speaking must hurt. But well, that's a shame that some really good actors like Chiklis and the Bunk, get a little overshadowed by the dumbness of the movie. So overall, thumbs down for Mr. Parker.
Thumbs sideways. It was like the only. There's nothing exciting out in the theaters right now. It was a better movie than Movie 43.
I guess that's saying something. Good job, Parker.
You've conquered Movie 43.
You conquered Movie 43. Time to sit back and let the dollars roll in. dollars. You're not going to be making a lot of money on this movie. Anyway, all right, well, cool. Well, I'm sorry that you had to go through that. We both had our respective journeys to make through the horrible world of bad movies, and now we've made them, and... was there any kind of big movie news we wanted to, mention briefly before we head off? I think we had some Spider-Man topics to discuss really quickly.
Yeah, one or two. I mean, that's been kind of slow lately, too, I feel like. But, real quick, Chris Cooper is going to be playing Norman Osborn in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I think it's a great choice.
I think that is a great choice. There's been a couple other casting choices for villains in Spider-Man 2 that I'm less excited about.
Right, like Paul Giamatti as the Rhino.
Yeah. And everyone defends it with, like, oh, but if you look at his face, you could see it poking through the rhino suit. I'm like, okay, well, as long as we don't see him without the rhino suit, maybe that can work, but...
Maybe. I don't know. And as long as he's only in the movie for maybe 6 minutes,
yeah.
And like you've always said before, he's just somebody that gets taken down right away.
Which they should absolutely do in more superhero movies, is there should just be, like, kind of like in a James Bond movie. There's something James Bond needs to do as an exciting opening to the movie,
mm-hmm.
and then has no connection to the rest of the movie, usually.
Right.
They should have that. Spider-Man should take down the rhino. That should be your opening action sequence. And then, like, we go in and have a Spider-Man movie with the main villain.
Right. Played by Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. That can work, I guess. I have no real problem with that. It's just that in both cases... Jamie Foxx is not the guy I think of when I'm like, oh, I gotta cast Electro, gotta cast Electro.
Right.
Obviously, Jamie Foxx, or, like, same thing with, oh, I gotta cast the Rhino. Oh, Paul Giamatti, of course.
Yeah, not very obvious choices for either one of those roles. Yeah, I mean, I'm not as into the comics as you are, but I know who Electro is, obviously, and I've seen him here and there in a few animated things. I mean, yeah, Jamie Foxx, he could do it, and I'm sure he'll do a fine job, too, but yeah, it wouldn't have been the first place I went to when thinking about who to cast for that character. I don't know if I know who I would have cast instead, but yeah, I don't know, it just seems like a bit of an odd choice, but I think he'll be okay with it. He'll do good with it. Should be interesting.
Yeah.
Because he's black, isn't he?
No, it's honestly, it's not.
You're more racist?
More than that, it's that... Because I don't care if they make the character black. Electro's not a major character anyway. They make Nick Fury black, and Sam Jackson did a fantastic job with that. It's a reimagining of the character in either case.
Fantastic as in you hate him because he's black?
No.
I'm kidding.
Not that at all.
Okay.
My concern with Electro more is kind of the same concern I had with the Sandman to a degree. It's that they're going to try to make him something that he's not.
Right.
Because the Sandman in the Marvel Universe is really just kind of like a bank robber.
Yeah, he's a low-tier villain. He doesn't have a grand plan or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he had a grand plan in Spider-Man 3, but there just shouldn't have been that much attention paid to him because he's not that interesting.
Yeah, they gave him this whole, like, ooh, he's a sick daughter,
okay.
And I'm afraid they're gonna do something like that with Electro to try to, like, flesh him out and make him more interesting. But really, like, in the comics, he's less just a bank robber and more, like, more dangerous than that, I guess. And that might just be the nature of his powers.
Right.
But, usually he's just trying to kill Spider-Man and pull off some caper.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
And I've heard rumors that they're going to try to make it so that, like, oh, well, he starts off as a superhero that's helping Spider-Man.
Yeah, like, I've heard that, too. He's, like, his sidekick or something like that, and then goes bad, which is...
I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea at all.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, Spider-Man went through so many sidekicks, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was the sort of motif, his pairing up with people, because his big thing was he wanted to endanger other people's lives, so he would constantly draw people into his role as Spider-Man.
That's his favorite thing.
Yeah, that's his absolute favorite thing. Well, I don't know. We'll see if it works. I mean, Jamie Foxx is obviously a fantastic actor. I think he'll do something. I think he himself will be excellent in the role. Whether or not the role is what the movie needs is another story, but, you know, obviously he's a great actor. And
same with...
Giamatti.
Well, yeah, and I was going to jump back to even Spider-Man 3, which was an abysmal movie, but that's not the fault of...
Thomas Hayden Church.
Thomas Hayden Church.
No, he was a fine actor. He did what he was supposed to do with that material.
Yeah, not his fault.
No, not his fault at all that piece of poop movie failed miserably.
Like, I actually think that's good casting for him as Sandman.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like an affable, like, blue-collared guy.
You know,
knock over a bank. I'm Spider-Man! And that's the end of his storyline.
Yep.
All you really need... Well, let's cross our fingers that they'll do something similar with the Rhino, and Electro won't be annoying.
Here's hoping. The first movie was good, so, you know.
I still haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it soon, and then hopefully I'll have more perspective on this movie, because I'm kind of going into this blind, so any choice they make, I'm just kind of like, it's weird, but I can't really speak to whether it's a good or a bad one, because I didn't see the first one. So.
Yeah, definitely check it out. I feel like in the first Spider-Man movie, or first Amazing Spider-Man movie, this new one with Mark Webb and Andrew Garfield here, they nailed Spider-Man better than Spider-Man's ever been portrayed before.
Like, oh, that's cool.
He banters and uses his webs in interesting ways that Spider-Man would think to do,
mm-hmm.
In ways that we didn't get with Tobey Maguire,
okay.
Sam Raimi movies. Also, he doesn't cry every 2 seconds.
Aw, nuts.
Oh, I know we all miss that.
That's key with Spider-Man.
And then the only negative thing I gotta say about it is, like, I feel like they handled the lizard very not... very improperly.
Well, yeah, because he's more of like a werewolf than anything else. He doesn't want to be doing the things that he's doing. But
right, that's in the comics. He's like that.
Yeah.
And in the movie,
it's just like, I've got a grand plan for the city. You know,
yeah.
Oh, that sucks. I kind of saw that coming with the trailer, but yeah.
So that makes me a little nervous about the handling of villains in Amazing Spider-Man 2. But we can only wait and see.
Yep. Well, unless there's something else earth-shattering that you'd like to talk about, I think we're done with this episode.
I think we are as well. Any final thoughts?
I really like pizza and Welch's grape soda and honey mustard sauce.
Are we looking forward to anything coming up very soon?
Just the usual comic book movies we got on the plate. I mean, Iron Man 3 is coming out soon. You've got the Superman movie.
When does Superman come out?
I think it's in like a couple of months. I'm not sure. It's definitely this coming like summer, I think.
There's a crime movie by David Fincher called Dead Man Down.
Okay.
Starring Colin Farrell and Noomi Rapace.
Yes! Yes, I did.
That's coming out next month. Or this month, actually. I think in a week.
Okay.
So
check that out.
So that's exciting to me.
one thing I was actually going to try and see this today, but unfortunately none of the theaters around where we live were playing it, and I didn't feel like traveling too far, is it's a movie called Stoker, which is the American debut of Park Wook-chan.
Yes.
Korean, right?
Korean,
Korean filmmaker who has done phenomenal films like Old Boy, which is fantastic if you've never seen it. And then he also did a Korean vampire movie called Thirst, which is just excellent. It's out of this world. It's really, really good. So he's making his American debut with this gothic thriller starring Nicole Kidman. I can never pronounce her name correctly, but she was the lead actress in that awful Alice in Wonderland movie. And she was also in this HBO series called In Treatment, which... she was absolutely phenomenal, and she should have been nominated for something. It's a shame that she wasn't. So I'm a fan of her, so I'm excited to see her in this movie. But yeah, Stoker, gothic thriller, directed by Park Wook-chan, his American debut. I'm stoked to see Stoker.
I am as well, actually. I forgot that you brought that up. But yeah, Park Wook-chan is really awesome. Any of his movies, definitely check out.
Mm-hmm.
I might check that out, too.
Yeah.
Stoker. I haven't seen Miss Kidman in a while, either.
Yeah. No, hopefully this is... a return to form for her.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, no, I'm tapped out.
I got nothing.
All right. This episode is over. Thank you for joining. No, I'm kidding. Again, thank you so much for joining us. I've been your host, Greg McIver, and with me is my co-host,
Nikki Boom Boom.
And we'll see you next time.